am very grateful to folks who hold our meetings. And I'm also very nervous this morning, and it helps me when I just tell the truth about that. And a question that my sponsor often asks me is, who are you thinking about? And when I'm nervous, I'm thinking about me. You know? I'm thinking about, what will you think of me? What, you know, what am I going to say? Is it going to be the right thing? Blah, blah, blah. This is a big meeting, and I'm not a person who is particularly fond of speaking, even at small meetings, and so it's a little overwhelming. But there are so many familiar faces here, and I always feel at home in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, even though in the beginning that wasn't my experience. I didn't come in and feel at home right away, but I've come to feel at home here. So it helps if I just tell the truth about my nervousness and then try to think about, what can I bring instead of what is everybody thinking and all of that. So I wanted to share with you this morning how I work my program. And I thought that the best way for me to show you how I work my program is to pass around these pictures so that you can see the great success that Marcy has when Marcy works Marcy's program. Marcy's program got Marcy up to over 250 pounds, high blood pressure. Marcy's program helped her to rupture all the discs in her cervical spine. Marcy's program had her miserable on her job and in arguments and tiffs and fights with most of the people on her job. And the book talks about, I was having trouble with personal relationships. I was a prey to misery and depression. I couldn't seem to be of real use to other people. And that's what Marcy's program will do for you. It'll get you into pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, which was really where my program got me. And so if you want to know how to work the program, because we do have just a common solution, one program, the way to find out how to work that program is to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's where the plan of recovery is offered. And the plan is offered in specific and precise terms, and they give you clear-cut directions. So if you want permanent recovery and sobriety and serenity and peace and happiness and joyousness and freedom, then follow the plan that's outlined in this book. Don't follow Marcy's plan. But I'm so grateful to God for my abstinence today. It's only by the grace of God that I'm abstinent today. And I'm really, really, really clear about that and really thankful for that. Am I talking loud enough? I sometimes, tell me if I'm not. You know, sometimes I hear people say that abstinence is really hard, or they say that following a food plan is really hard. And I never really understand that, because for me, it wasn't hard. Like, algebra is hard, or ballet would probably be very hard for me to do. But abstinence from compulsive overeating was impossible. It was impossible. It wasn't hard. It was absolutely impossible for me on my own power. I had no control. The book talks about, we're like people who have lost our legs when it comes to controlling whatever our problem is. And my problem was overeating. My problem was overeating, and I could not control my overeating. I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. And my solution to overeating was always a chemical one. It was always to get the latest diet pill. I was always kind of clear that I couldn't do it on my own. I just didn't know that I needed to find a higher power to do it. I knew I needed some help, but the help that I always sought for many, many years was diet pills. And so I also qualify as an addict. And that was always my solution. And I could put together a diet, and I could put together some weight loss if if I could take a diet pill. And diet pills kind of stopped being an option for me around the time I hit 40, because there was a lot of information about not taking diet pills and the damage that they were doing. And I didn't want to die. You know, I was not ever a person who really wanted to die. And so right around 40, I kind of stopped doing the diet pill thing and kind of just surrendered to being into the disease. And just eating what I wanted, when I wanted, and just kind of not caring, you know, not making much of an attempt to control my overeating for probably like 7 years. So I came into program when I was 47. I came into program when I was 47. So like for 7 years, I pretty much was just not making any attempt to control my overeating. And, you know, what it was like, I just ate what I wanted, when I wanted, and how I wanted. I had a real relationship with sugar, which was like my favorite binge food, and any kind of recreational sugar. But, you know, especially like cake, birthday cake was my thing. It's funny, I sponsor someone and she talks about birthday cake, and we could so identify because that was just my thing, you know. And I used to fantasize about like if you're at the park and somebody else is having a birthday party, I used to fantasize about how could I go up and join their party so I could have some. And I used to just go and buy birthday cakes and have them write different names on them so they wouldn't know that the whole cake was for me. You know, I'd go to the bakery by my house, and after a while I didn't even bother with the names. I just went, you know, I just went and bought the cakes after a while. And, you know, I can just remember just really being in the clutches of the food and just, you know, I get on kicks. I don't know if other people got, I get on kicks with stuff like Cold Stone Creamery. That was one of my last kicks. I'm sorry if people don't like to hear about food, but it's part of my story. And I was going there like every day, like 2 and 3 times a day. I would pay people from work to go there for me. I'd say, would you go, you know, I'll buy you one if you go for me. You know, don't you want one? And I mean, 2 and 3 times a day, just over and over and over and stuff like that. And, you know, I can remember stuff. Like, some of it's funny. Like, I used to go to a bakery in Beverly Hills, a fancy bakery in Beverly Hills, and if you go there and you say you're getting married, they give you a box of cakes to take home to share with your groom. to decide what cake you want. You know, they give you, like, icing in a little cup, and, you know. And I used to go there, and I thought I was very clever and cool that I was, like, running this scam on these people, and I would go there and get a box of cake, you know. And I guess it's kind of funny, but it's kind of mean, too, because, you know, and I actually made amends to those, to that bakery. But, you know, funny stuff, and then sad stuff, too. Like, I can remember one time I was driving to a friend's birthday party, and it was my job to bring the cake to the birthday party. And I can remember, like, starting just tasting the icing on the box, you know. And it was just as if this whatever gets a hold of me. And I can remember, you know, just doing that over and over. And by the time I got there, I had eaten, like, half a sheet cake. By the time I got to the party, and it wasn't that far of a drive, and having to make up a story about that I dropped the cake, and, you know, and come in all full of drama, like, oh, I'm so sorry, I dropped your cake, you know, but I had eaten the cake, you know, stuff like that. I can just remember stuff like that, but not really thinking about that stuff at the time, you know. I didn't think about it then. I don't even think I felt guilty about doing that then. I feel bad about doing it today. I'd like to find that person and make amends to her. She's somebody that I haven't been able to find. I'd like to make amends for that today. But at the time, I wasn't feeling bad about that. You know, I was just glad I had the cake, you know. So, you know, that was what it was like. And it was like that for most of my life. My story is not that I was a heavy child. I was not a heavy child. But I always had that kind of relationship with food.
I stole food, I snuck food, I was always overeating. And, you know, I don't know why that didn't manifest until I was an adult, into weight on me, but I wasn't an overweight child or even a really overweight teenager. But by the time I hit my 20s, I was starting to pick up weight and starting to come up with my solutions for losing weight, which I said were always like, you know, diet pills and fad diets, never anything sane. And, you know, what happened to change me and bring me into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous is pretty much like I said, I was really surrendered to the overeating and pretty much enjoying it. And if people would say something to me about it, I said, I'm healthy. It's not, you know. Now, you know, I was morbidly obese. This is that, you know, and that means basically that your obesity is going to hasten your death. It's going to hasten your death. It's going to contribute to your death. I was morbidly obese in all my medical records. But I would argue and say, it's not affecting my health. I feel fine, blah, blah, blah. And what basically happened to kind of wake me up is that I ruptured the disc in my cervical spine. I didn't have an accident. Nothing happened. But one day, I was in such tremendous pain, and I thought I was having a heart attack, and I went to Cedars, and they did MRIs and all this kind of stuff, and I had ruptured the disc in my neck. And you can see from my pictures, I was a very top-heavy kind of a person, so most of my weight was in my upper body. And when I went, and they finally made the diagnosis, and I went to the doctor, and I was like, why me? How could this happen to me? I didn't have an accident, you know, because they asked you, did you have a recent whiplash? Or, no, you know, how could this happen to me? Blah, 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 why me? The doctor said very kindly and kind of quietly, like, because he probably didn't want to piss me off, but he said, Marcy, we see these type of things in people who smoke and who are excessively overweight. And I was both of those things. I was a smoker at that time. And so I made up my mind then, because I was in terrible pain. I had to have major spinal surgery. And they told me that the surgery will not be successful. You will continue to have problems if you don't lose weight and quit smoking. So I made up my mind. I'm going to quit smoking and I'm going to lose weight. And it says a lot about this disease that I quit smoking. I was able to quit. I still think about it. I miss smoking. I like smoking. I enjoy it. And I still think about it from time to time. But it doesn't call me. I was able to stop on my own power. But as much as I wanted to stop overeating at that point, I couldn't. You know, I just couldn't. And the more, it seems to me like looking back, the more I wanted to stop and the harder I tried to stop, because I had this, you know, this diagnosis now, and I, you know, it was killing me now, and it was clear to me, but the harder I tried to stop, I couldn't, and the worse it got, and I was binging every day, and I just couldn't stop, and it was as if I was just caught up in this thing, like that, you know, that Indiana Jones movie with that big ball, and the ball is coming at him, and he's running. That's how my disease feels to me, like as if that ball was just chasing me down, and I just couldn't get away from it, and I couldn't stop, and I couldn't put together a day, you know, of dieting, really. And we went to Las Vegas to celebrate. I have a real gift in my life of a lot of people who are recovered addicts and alcoholics, and we went to Las Vegas to celebrate someone's like 20th birthday, you know, so sober birthday, and somebody else's 15th birthday or something like that. So there were like a lot of sober people who were working a 12-step program around me. And there I am in Vegas, and I'm like eating half of Vegas, you know. And all these people who were around me who were enjoying themselves with, you know, without alcohol, without, you know, drugs, in the city of Las Vegas, you know, where you can get anything you want. And something, and I believe today it was God, but something just said to me that, Marcy, you have to get some help, and the help that you need to get is in OA, is in a 12-step program. And I didn't know anybody in OA. That's not true. I knew somebody in OA, but she had not had any, you know, success. working the program or anything, so she wasn't like an attraction or anything like that. But these people, these sober addicts and alcoholics, were attractions to me. And I thought, if they could be off crack, because these were crack addicts, if they could be off crack for 15 years, you know, and be off alcohol and be happy about it, that maybe there was something in the 12 steps that could help somebody who couldn't stop eating. And that's what brought me into the program. And I came to, on a Wednesday night, I came in abstinent because I asked somebody, I said, I don't understand, like, I can understand how sobriety means you don't drink or, you know, you don't do drugs, but what do people do in Overeaters Anonymous? Because you do have to eat food. And the answer that I got gave me my first abstinence, which was that that people in OA eat three meals a day with nothing in between. And today I know that's not true, that some people eat four meals a day and some people have snacks. But that was my understanding. That was what that person gave to me, and that was my first food plan. And it was as if, just, I don't know, for me it was almost as if just the willingness to come in and just the willingness to do it, somehow God entered. And I didn't have a consciousness of that. It wasn't like, oh, but it was as if it happened in that time, even though I wasn't aware of it. And I came in abstinent, and I had a moderate breakfast that day and a moderate lunch. And I went to a 7 o'clock meeting on Fountain in Fairfax that's no longer there. I think it might be somewhere else now. But that was my first meeting, and I just have kept coming back ever since. And I was just somebody who was so in so much pain when I came in, and just so devastated by the disease that I stood ready to just do anything. And anything that anybody told me to do or anything that I heard from the podium, I was willing to try it. I wasn't a debater or an arguer, and it wasn't because that's not my nature, because that's very much my nature to argue and debate, but it was because I was just beaten and I didn't have a fight left in me. And I felt very out of place. I always felt like I was the fattest person in the room. I went to a lot of meetings on this side of town. And, I went to a lot of meetings where there were a lot of anorexics or whatever. And I always felt like I was just the fattest person, and that I was probably your worst nightmare, and that everybody hated me. And I felt like I was the only person of color, and I'm a lesbian, and I felt like everybody else was straight. And I felt very, very out of place. But I kept coming back, and I kept coming back. And that was just me thinking that. And people were loving and kind to me, but I didn't experience it like that. But I still kept coming because I didn't have anywhere else to go. And every meeting I went to, or every speaker always said something about the steps. And so it was very clear to me that if I wanted recovery, if I wanted to be successful or whatever in this program, I needed to work the 12 steps. And I was really, really blessed that I got into a workshop early on in my abstinence. I had 30 days, and I got into a workshop where we worked the 12 steps. I'm sorry, thank you, Jeff. Where we worked the 12 steps the way they're outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous together as a group. And I've been in that workshop ever since. It's not even an OA workshop. It was an AA workshop. My sponsor directed me to go there, and I've been in there, and I've just been in there ever since. We work the steps over and over the way they're outlined in the book, and that's where you find the plan of recovery, and it talks about we can be recovered. We can be recovered from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that is alcoholism or overeating or whatever it is. And that's been my experience. The obsession is gone. Food doesn't call me. I can go anywhere today. I take my mom to Baskin and Robbins when she wants to go. I go to buffets. I eat at buffets. You know, for me, abstinence is about refraining from compulsive overeating. That's the bottom line for me, because that was my problem. I have a food plan. I always tell people that I sponsor, that I work with, that I believe that a food plan is what gives us separation. I stop at 8:30. Is that at 9:30?
Yeah.
I believe a food plan is what gives us the separation from the physical part of the disease so that we can work the steps. The big book talks about you, an alcoholic has to be separated. You can't work the steps drunk. I can't work the steps binging on excess food. I can't work the steps like that, you know. So I believe that a food plan separates us from the physical part of the disease. And the only thing I ever tell people that I sponsor about a food plan is that it shouldn't come out of their head, you know. My head, no, but you know, a lot of people say, oh, I'm going to come up with my own food plan. People, that, you know, but my head is my problem. So the solution to my problem can't come from my problem. And my sick brain cannot fix my sick brain. You know? So I abstain from compulsively overeating one day at a time by the grace of God, by having a food plan, and by abstaining from my alcoholic foods, which, you know, for me are the cookies, cakes, ice cream, candy, anything. It doesn't matter, fruit juice, sweetened. If it looks like cake, it's going to be cake for me. So I abstain from all that stuff. And I never talk about this, but I also abstain from meat, which is a funny thing. I'm vegetarian. I always wanted to be vegetarian, always. And I could never do it. And I would actually, like, lie to people and say, oh, I'm vegetarian. Because I thought it was, like, spiritual or something. And I would, like, tell lies and say I was vegetarian and I wasn't. And I'd be binging on chili cheeseburgers. But I'm a vegetarian, you know. And then people would catch me, like, my son would say, Mom, you said you're vegetarian. Oh, this is tofu. just bald, you know, boldly lie. But I thought, you know, God could help me with overeating. God could help me be a vegetarian. So I asked for help with that, and I've been a vegetarian since the beginning of my abstinence, which is just another miracle. You know, it's just, you know, God can and will do what we can't do, and what I talk to people I sponsor with is we do need willpower to work this program. We do need willpower to work the steps. We don't need willpower to control our food. We don't have it. We don't need willpower to follow a food plan. If we don't have that. But we do need willpower to follow the plan. And that, the book talks about that's the proper use of our will. That's how we use our will properly, is in trying to align it with God's wishes for us, with God's intended purpose for us. And so Dr. Bob, who's like my personal favorite, talks about that if you really want to get over your drinking, he said, or your overeating, if you go about this program with like one half the zeal that you went about getting your next bite, so if I go about it with one half the zeal that I came up with all those plans to get birthday cake and to get ice cream, half the zeal, you know, God won't let me down. He says, your heavenly Father won't let me down. And so, you know, my higher power has not let me down yet, and I'm very grateful for that, and I'm so grateful to be here today, and I can't wait to hear from you guys. Thanks for listening.